and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I'm the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as its founder and CEO. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with our families with who have children with learning challenges. And I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. And I'm so excited this month, as well as every other month, we focus on a different topic. And so this month we're focusing on medical issues and homeschooling, which a lot of people deal with, and we don't talk about them too much. That's why we wanted to focus on them this month. So all of our blogs and all of our broadcasts this month that are coming out new are focusing around this topic to help you navigate that better. And my guest today, and I'm going to pronounce her name correctly, is Valerie Bazalevich. Is that
Bazalevich?
Bazalevich. Yeah, I said it right when I was not.
No, I did.
So, but yeah, I'll read a little bit of her bio, and then I'm going to have her introduce herself a little bit more too. But Valerie has earned her doctorate in medicine from Ohio State University and completed her family practice residency in Columbus, Ohio, at Carmel Health. And she also earned her master herbalist degree in 2003 and doctorate in naturopathy in 2004 from Trinity School of Natural Health. And she's employed as a family practice physician from 1998 through 2005 and opened a health store called The Healthy Path in 2001, which later included naturopathic consultations starting in 2005 and then integrative medicine appointments with an emphasis on chronic Lyme disease and other tick-borne infectious and other chronic infectious diseases. So welcome, Valerie. I am just excited to have you share. And thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us today.
No problem. Homeschooling is a passion of mine, so I just like to help out whenever I can.
Yeah. So can you tell us why homeschooling is a passion of yours?
It's an interesting story. I had my kids when I was in medical school and residency, and so then went on to private practice and had my kids. And so I was trying to juggle, was just really hard.
I can't even imagine.
it's definitely a tough one. But I remember when I was doing family practice that I had a lot of homeschooling patients come in. Their families, homeschooling families. And the kids were always well-disciplined, polite. They're just very knowledgeable. And I'm like, boy, that sounds really interesting. So I always kept that in the back of my mind. And then at some point I realized, well, my kids, they had different issues, you know, when they were younger. Mm-hmm. But my son was finally diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome. And then, which we didn't really know about. And of course, a lot of the other diagnoses that go along with it, the sensory integration dysfunction, ADHD, dysgraphia, central auditory processing disorder, the whole gamut. And then we realized that, my daughter had problems too. And so she was diagnosed with PDD-NOS, which is another type of autism.
Right.
So at that point, the principal of my son's school did not understand Asperger's at all. And he refused to sign the IEP. And my son was having some issues with if someone would touch him, just like bumping him in the hall.
Right.
He would be aggressive and push him back. You know, so sometimes they'd grab his shoulder, try to get first in line. And so he would be a little aggressive, which he's not supposed to be doing.
Right. But setting those boundaries, that's natural.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I understand. But the principal just totally didn't get it. And at the point, I was having problems too with burnout with medical practice. And so I finally decided, it's just best if we just go home. So this is going to be, I'm going to start homeschooling them. And I basically quit my practice to homeschool my kids. And eventually over time, I started doing medicine from home. So it was a home-based practice. Mm-hmm. But it was the best thing we ever did was to get the kids out of public school and to homeschooling myself. They made so much more progress. It was like it's a lifestyle. So homeschooling is a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just an awesome one. And I just was so glad for that time.
Yeah. That's so much the story of many people. It catches us by surprise, and it's a nice surprise.
Right.
Yeah. Once you get into that lifestyle thing.
Exactly. And just to finish a little bit of the history there, later, about a year into it, I found out that we all actually had Lyme disease, which caused a lot of these other problems. So my middle daughter was diagnosed with nonverbal learning disabilities and stuff. So basically all three kids had problems. I'm like, how can I have three kids with disabilities? You know, this is just really weird.
Right.
I found it was all due to Lyme. I had Lyme and passed it on to them. So Lyme was the fundamental issue. And so once we got that into treatment, I eventually became a Lyme doctor and got the kids, you know, all taken care of. And, you know, they did awesome. So I'll tell them about a little more about the journey as we go on.
Yeah, definitely. We'll be kind of talking about that and just discussing what you've learned through, you know, the process of homeschooling and the path that you started out on. And it probably was a little daunting at the beginning.
Yeah, it definitely is really scary. But the thought I had, because I was going back and forth, it's like, well, these are teachers. They're the professionals. You know,
right.
the whole thing is like, they can do better. And then someone pointed out to me, like, no, I know my own child better than anybody else. So that was empowering. And then the other thought was, it's like, well, I couldn't do any worse than what the school was doing. The school was messing up so many things. I mean, I was spending hours at night trying to teach them what they couldn't learn in school.
Right.
And it was just so stressful. And I'm thinking, gosh, you know, I can do at least as well, but it turned out I did much better. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great story. Yes. We often find that is true. And usually our kids are falling further and further behind, and it is that nice respite that we can give them at home to learn an environment. So a question I wanted to ask you is, what are some ways that parents can be mindful of their children's limitations, you know, coming in, especially as a new parent, and yet not allowing those setbacks to be used as excuses for not learning?
That was probably one of our biggest challenges, because with Lyme disease, each day can be different. Some days they can be totally, you know, fine and just really into things. And then other days they're just sleeping and napping a little extra. They got a lot of brain fog going on, maybe some pain, things like that. So each day was different. So I had to discern, like, okay, what's real and what are they exaggerating, because I don't want to do their work.
Yeah.
So that's really tough. And of course, I was going through the same journey myself with Lyme too. So I had the ups and down days as well. So I totally understood what they were going through.
Yeah.
And what I really finally came to realize is that, you know, kids really don't fake it, I don't think, at least at the younger ages. If they're not feeling good, if they're laying on the sofa, it's not because they're lazy or, you know, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. So being empathetic. And so one of the morals we have, not morals, but sayings we had in our family was, I mean, like, was basically just if you just had to do what you could when you could. So if you're having a great day, let's do a little bit extra, but not pushing too hard. That, you know, makes it hard the next day. But then other days, if they need to take off, you know, then they took off. So I was just trying to be that flexible about it, just seeing where they were at. Also trying to discern, like, sometimes they may not be able to do really complicated, like, my girls were not into math. I mean, I love math, but they were not. And so trying to have them do math on days where they were very brain foggy and just not feeling good.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't going to work. But they could do other things. You know, they could maybe read a book, or you know, they could do some other projects, make some artwork, you know. There's other things they could do. So trying to figure out how they were feeling and then trying to, you know, help them with suggestions on what they can do on those days.
Being really flexible with that.
Flexible.
Morning is, you would find out in the morning, what's our day going to look like?
Right. And then on top of that too, my kids, they would sleep a long time too. So, you know, but that was where it was the advantage, because with homeschooling, you know, they could sleep in if they needed to. If they were in school, I mean, they'd be getting up at dawn, having to, you know, get into school, and half, you know, a couple hours later, I mean, they're done for the day, even though they still have more to go. So, they had the flexibility, and then that can maximize how they feel, and then that then they get more learning done. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That kind of leads us into that whole routine thing. You know, and you even talked about, you know, making this a lifestyle, but do you have any recommendations for families on how to incorporate, you know, different things into their homeschooling routines, and what maybe makes that easier, like curriculum choices and, just maybe, some general, like, family practices, like you were talking about, is, you know, just do it if you can do it.
you know, most of us tended to, we slept in and we sort of went to bed late. So luckily we all had the same schedule.
Right.
Really good. But, you know, you just had basic things, like just having breakfast and brushing your teeth and, you know, just, you know, getting bathed, you know, that type of thing. Bedtime routine, you know, that was very consistent. But each day, though, in our case was pretty different. I wish we had more consistency. My son needed it way more. He needed very, very structured, very rigid. Mm. He liked the traditional curriculums, you know, where it's just you read this, you do these exercises in the book, you know, maybe take a test, you know. I mean, he liked that rigidity and just to know what was there. So his life was a little more structured. When he started homeschooling, he was in seventh grade. Because I also was sick, I really did not want to be, I did not want to do public school at home. Okay. So I was very much into, okay, we're just going to do education differently to what best for all of us together.
Right.
So I wasn't going to sit there and just teach for, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours a day. Was not going to work. Uh-huh. So what I did for him and for my daughter, who's in fifth grade, they had a weekly schedule and they were able to follow it themselves. So each day they had things that they needed to do. And then they had a lot of free time, you know, to do other things that they wanted to do. And I think when you're not feeling good, I think it's really, really important for these kids to have some choice in their curriculum. So, because if they're not feeling good, I mean, they may not want to, like in my girl's case, learn mathematics, you know, do that, but they could do other things. One daughter loved to write. I mean, she was a writer. She loved to read. She could do that type of stuff all day long. So she had lots of credits with that. So we made allowances so she had time to do that. That was part of her. So each child had their things that they liked to do. So there's certain things they had to do. You have to know some basics here to graduate. But then other side, giving them a lot of flexibility so that they could choose what they wanted to do. So that helped a lot.
That's great advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the things just changed throughout the day. So it wasn't so much like, you know, here's the schedule for the day. Like here at 2 o'clock, you do this. At 3 o'clock, you do that.
Right, yeah, not separated out of time.
That. Yeah, it's because depending on how they felt, it varied so much. Mm-hmm. So, but they sort of know, at least for the week, here's for the day what, you know, I suggest you work on, so that by the end of the week, you know, you can be finished. And sometimes things got moved around a little bit depending on what's happening. Mm-hmm. We had some guideline there. My third child, she was more into the unschooling. She thrived on unschooling. She had some really interesting courses and opportunities that she did. So a lot of her life was based on animals. She was in 4-H. Ended up being one of the top people at the 4-H in the state. But she loved that. So it was very non-traditional type of bookwork. So I had sort of the gamut. Everybody was different. When I started off, I was always thinking, boy, it would be really nice if they all could just use these same books. That didn't happen. Yeah, one was different.
Well, I love that you say that because I think that's the pretty typical that way, but it's not what we have in our mind when we get started, that this is what homeschooling is going to look like and why we have so many books in our house.
Exactly. Yeah, there's just so many. And I think it's great to be flexible. That's the advantage, just to see what your kids need. So if they're having illness, I mean, there might be times when the illness is... it's just where they can't do any work at all those days, you know, and then other times, you know, they can do more. So just really seeing what they can and can't do. And I think it's really important that they are able to basically choose what to work on. So what I'm trying to mean by that is that my son was very much into sciences and math and history, you know, that stuff. Mm-hmm. Fine arts? No, he did. He was not fine arts at all. English? No, that wasn't his thing either. So we did, so much extra science, you know, history. I mean, he had so many credits in those because he liked it and he would do that. Uh-huh. But if you had tried to tell him to do an art project, it wasn't going to happen, even if he felt good. But if he didn't feel good.
Oh, then it really wasn't going to happen.
Exactly. So they had basics they had to do, but each one's credits, I mean, emphasized different things so they could maximize what they would do when they, you know, end up getting out of school, whether it be college or whatever. So I think that's a real big take home message is to, you know, to not just do what they do in school. So in other words, there's this many facts in the world, this much knowledge. Mm-hmm. And you're homeschooling, you're only going to get a big piece of it. It could be this piece, it could be that piece, but it's not going to be everything.
Right. And the public school does the same thing. They just try to spread it out, little bits here and there, where you're kind of taking the more linear approach to this is what this child is good at. So let's stay within this track, maybe do a little things on the outside to give them a little bit of enrichment, but really stay within their interest area so that they're really, they have more mental energy to do school.
Exactly. And again, my son had to learn how
such
to write.
A good idea.
The girls had to learn how to do their accounting, their basic mm-hmm. math. I mean, they still had to do the basics, but,
right.
But let's emphasize what they really want to do. And it turned mm-hmm. out like my middle daughter, the other thing you can actually do with these kids is their therapies can be part of education.
So, yes, I'd love for you to talk about that.
Yeah, so my youngest, she really needed a lot of occupational therapy. Mm. And at some point, we got involved in horseback riding. So instead of doing actual I forgot what they call it now. I just totally forgot the word. Oh, yeah, where they're just led on the horse. They're actually somebody's doing therapy with them.
Like hippotherapy?
Hippotherapy, that's the word. Mm-hmm. So she didn't actually do that, but instead she just took lessons. So we just had private lessons. Mm-hmm. And so it was like she learned to ride the horses the right way. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of like a accelerated hippotherapy. but again, that was so therapeutic for her. She didn't have all instructions. She interacted with people. The animals were just great therapy for her. So like I mentioned, she got she actually has in high school credit in equine science. So she knew, mm-hmm. I'm thinking like, okay, is this legitimate, But it turned out she knew more than her cousin who took a horse class in college.
Wow.
And she knew more than he did. So I'm like, I can give her credit for this. Yes. No problem. Yep. Mm-hmm. So that was one where, it actually became credit for her. That was part of her curriculum. We thought at one point she was going to actually have a career in horses. It turned out that didn't happen. But and later on, for example, she needed to learn, I wanted her to know about Shakespeare.
Okay.
But again, she wasn't really the greatest at reading the plays at first. Mm-hmm. So we went to Shakespeare Company to watch plays. And then we would talk about them afterwards. Mm-hmm. Well, then she decided she wanted to do acting. And I'm like, this is a kid with PDD, NOS. Okay,
wow.
So normally I'm not interactive and into these things. Uh-huh. It turned out she ended up excelling with it. She learned people skills, how to read Shakespeare, how to actually do Shakespeare. She played Juliet her last year at the company. So that turned into a credit as well.
Yeah, that's such a good example of unschooling, what you just explained. And a lot of people don't understand that, but just following that interest and then really diving into it and seeing where it goes. And like you said, it opens doors to new interests that they never even realized they had.
Exactly. And so it turned out that that's where she got a lot of her people skills. And now she's doing coaching people. So again, something I would not have expected this kid to do at all. But she's at the point now where you can't even tell she has, any US. And my other daughter, she loved ballet. So the reason why she started homeschooling to begin with was because there was just not enough time in the day to do school and dance. So we chose to do dance. So that's when we took her out of public school. Mm-hmm. And so she went to dance every day. And she turned out to be a professional ballet dancer.
Wow.
So, loved it so much. So I think following interest is a real big key because again, they'll do it because it can turn into a career or help them get into a career later on if they need.
Right. Yeah. It just helps them explore that. And it's such a non judgmental environment to say, well, we're just trying it, or we're just going to do a class in it and see what you think. And then they don't feel like that they've devoted their entire life already to something.
Right. So my middle daughter, when she told me that the only reason why she likes soccer is because she liked the snacks after the game, it was like, okay, we're not going to do soccer anymore. She didn't really like it. So we got to try it and we got to see. Mm-hmm. So that was good.
Yeah. Well, and she already knew that about herself.
So therapies can be either officially put in. So like sometimes it's about occupational therapy and we just counted that was put on their homeschool agenda for that week or day. Mm-hmm. It was put into there. So that was part of, so it wasn't like they had to do their schooling and do therapies. We actually included it together.
Got it. Yep.
And so I think that, that was a helpful way of doing it too, because then it's like, mm-hmm. if that's all they got to do that day, well, they still did school.
Right. Know? Yes. We've had many parents ask that question too. And they're like, well, my child's doing therapy for, you know, like many, many hours in a day. Well, and then how do I get all the reading, writing, math done? And it's like, you don't.
No, you really don't. And so if you're in therapy for that long during a day, mm-hmm. There's a lot of that can be, like my middle daughter, she had a high school credit in disabilities care because part of what she did is she helped her younger sister with a lot of things, communication issues and playing time and all that. So that turned into a credit for her.
That's a great idea.
Even like I mentioned, my daughter just like her, horse lessons which were for occupational therapy turned into a horse credit. So if you can turn it into a credit, that's great. Sometimes social studies, can be like ABA or something like that. That can be like social studies credit or something. But of course, it depends on how you rephrase that. If it depends on what the potential is. And I think it's important to know to recognize what your mission is as for homeschooling. Mm-hmm. So sometimes with kids, my kids, I knew two of the three, I wasn't sure about my daughter at the time, we're probably going to end up in college. The third one, I wasn't sure she was going to be able to. And it turned out she did. But sometimes you might have a kid with certain disabilities and just like, no, that's not going to happen. We're just trying to get them to do basic activities of daily living. Then you just gear everything to that. So sort of knowing what the goal is and trying to help them maximize towards that goal, which can change with time.
Right. Yes, it can change with time and their interests change. So, I mean, just even, what you were talking about with your daughter, they discover new things about themselves and about the world, and it takes them on a little bit of a detour of a path, and eventually they kind of get there. I think we stress out way too much about, where they're going to end up, and they kind of figure it out on their own. That's we just true. Have to be calm on our side. Not make them anxious.
It's so true. And especially when they get like into the older grades, when they decide to, at some point it gets to the point where you really can't make them do school. My girls were that way with math all the way until it was the last credit they got in high school. I mean, it was because they waited to the end. So you have certain boundaries where like, no, you have to learn this to graduate. Mm-hmm. And other times it's like, okay, just let it go. It doesn't matter. If they want to learn it, they can learn it later.
Exactly. So the question I've had been going on the back of my mind, and I didn't put it on our list that we prepared ahead of time, but that anxiety of we're not getting everything done, or we're not getting, enough done. And maybe you even wrote out a week schedule and half of it's left because it was a bad week. How do you as a parent deal with that? And then how do you help your student also manage that?
My kids didn't seem to have a problem with it. I don't know. I think they didn't really, if they didn't get something done, it's like,
that's good.
They were fine. But in my case, I felt like, the schedule says this, we have to be at this point at this time. And so it was a real learning curve for me to learn when to let go. And sometimes there are things that we need to get done. And other times it's like, well, I know this was a great plan, but it got to scrap and moves to something else. Latin started like that. We really do Latin. It lasted a couple of weeks and I realized this isn't working.
Yep.
We scrapped the whole thing. It just did not work. So I try to put some flexibility in the schedule. I've told my patients, because I help my patients a lot with homeschooling or other issues. It's just, this is where it's good to know what your mission is also up front. So for me, it was learning facts was not as important as critical thinking, Christian values, character, those types of issues. And so whenever nothing got done that day, it's like, did they do those things? Did we talk about the Bible? Did they show some good character? I come back to those. And generally, every day, those things got done. Learning to let go. And then when the kids got older, I think again, the math, the girls, we just put it on hold for a couple of years. We didn't do math. Seriously. Mm-hmm. I knew my one daughter was college bound, and I'm like, I love math. I was an engineer before medical school.
So
for me, it was like, how can my kids not like math? They have to like math. We got to do math, But just like, no, it's just that they were so excelling at other things. And that's right. This is their life, not my life. I can't live my life through them.
Yes. Oh, that's so good.
I got to figure out what they wanted to do with their life and try to really help them meet those goals. Mm-hmm. So they did have to learn some basic algebra, but we did that at the very last minute. But by that point, they were motivated. They were older. It was like,
yes,
I have a lot of things. You have to have certain competencies before you graduate. And so they did make it through. And we got to help.
Yeah.
But a lot of it, I think that homeschooling is a lifestyle, but it's also a great education for parents. Because if you just go into work and send your kids off to school, you don't really know your kids. I don't think I did until I really got to be with them. Mm-hmm. And I was so glad to have that time. So for me, I had to learn then, okay, how do I cope with this? And it's like letting things go with that work really important.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You pulled up the word coping. And I want to focus on that a bit, because sometimes we have to teach our children coping skills for dealing with their medical issues and just even pressing through sometimes when things are hard. What are some things that you recommend to families that they can do as like a family to really to pull together to help one another, but then also as long-term life skills for their children to become adults, and to how do I persevere through a chronic illness or through difficulties based on whatever disability that we have?
Yeah, that's a really tough question too. So it's actually pinpoint, like, how do you do this? My son is probably a good example for this one. The girls were a little more, really easy going, but he, yeah, he got very frustrated himself if he couldn't do something. He turned out he was really good at soccer. So he played soccer. He was really, really good with that. But he is also very hard on himself.
Oldest in the same way.
So one time he got mad at himself and he decided to put his fists, he's trying to put it through or hit the bleacher or the seat he was on. It was like a very hard structure. He ended up breaking his hand. So there he sort of learned by doing, I'm done better. But we always try to do the deep breathing, count to 10, like remove yourself from the situation. We tried talking about, those types of things. So when he got really aggravated, most of the time it was frustrated himself, but sometimes at other people. Yeah. So we had plans ahead of time as to what to do. But when he's gotten to be in high school, it was like, I couldn't be there as closely. So that was one thing he did on the field, when I couldn't be down there. But we talked about over what to do, what can we do next time? If you get really that angry, what can you do?
Right.
Didn't really help at that moment. But that's where he was also one that you could talk to your blue in the face, but he had to learn from experience. So a lot of it was knowing that that's the way he learned. But really trying to help with the self-esteem, but I would tell the kids, because they would feel, especially as they get older, they would know that, like, okay, they're different, they have problems. Everybody has a problem. We all have some problem, something we're not good at. Everybody has at least one. Most of us have more than that. It's good to know what those difficult areas are, and not to dwell on it, but like, that's why I always think concentrate on the things that they do well and the things that there's some issues with. It's like, okay, there's just some things we need to work on. We all have to work on something. I think that really helped, because my son was into sports, my daughter into dance, and horse, between all those activities, they knew they had to work at those things. So we tried to use some of the same concepts, like, okay, let's just apply that just to coping with your illness and what's going on. With Lyme disease, when you treat that, you can get something called herxing, which is a die-off reaction, and it can sort of make you feel really bad what's going on. So we have to sort of take it slowly. And of course, at the time you're thinking, like, they want to go to dance, they want to go to soccer, but if they're having issues, like, it's just hard to know. So it's real important for them to realize, okay, this isn't you. You are not the disease. Okay. Trying to differentiate who they are, and apart from their disease or disability or whatever. So I was pretty frank with them. I explained to them what their diagnoses were. Some parents like to keep that from the kids. Mine were probably a little older, so I felt it was important to talk to them about it, but not in a way that they're victims or that they're handicapped. It wasn't like that at all. you know, we all have something. These are just some of their areas. And so they might have to, if they have auditory processing, they might have to listen a little harder or ask someone to repeat something. Because if you had a broken leg, you would have a crutch. Okay. So that's, you know, you would use it because you needed it.
Right.
So trying to figure out those coping skills. And that's real important for when they get to the college years or employment or whatever. They're now suddenly their own advocate. IEPs and then your parents and, you know, if you're in public school, teachers or you'll help with that. But when they get older, they have to be their own advocate. And that was a good way to fall too. Like in college, like my son needed extra time, you know, he had to ask for the extra time, you know.
Right. Yeah. They don't listen to you.
You have to learn to be their own advocates as well. Coping. So for them to be their advocates, they had to understand their disability and diseases in such a way they can advocate for themselves, but not in a victim mentality. I didn't want that at all. I wanted them to be victors of it.
Yeah. I like that. Instead of victims, victors. Yes, and yes, we all do have bad days. We all, you know, have deficits. Some hide them better than others. And to have your child have an understanding of that as they're growing up, and just that we see people for, you know, what's good in them. And then we come alongside, and like you just explained about all your children, you know, having different giftings, and it is beautiful to see that it's best that we don't all have the same gift and we just be competing with each other.
Exactly. That's so true.
Awesome. So if you are watching, I forgot to say this, and we have quite a few viewers watching live right now. If you want to put in a comment or a question where you're watching from, if you have a question for Valerie while we're on live, we would love to entertain that if it's related to the topic. We're talking about homeschooling and chronic illnesses today, and we'd love for you to be a part of that conversation, or you can just sit and listen, and we'll just continue on with the questions. But we're glad that you're here with us, and we'd love for you to join us if you'd like. So as we're kind of going through our questions, Valerie, we had thought maybe we would talk a little about home environment. And just what can you do within your home environment to make it more healing? And to just make it naturally a more conducive setting for when your students, your children are having those bad days, to kind of feel comforted.
So our home was set up, we basically had a lot of occupational therapy type things. We had those, you know, Pilates balls, we had different balancing things, just all sorts of different, you know, things for them to work on. And then they had fun doing that. So that's also just where the TV was. So they got to do things while they watched, you know, TV, which we tried to minimize. And eventually we did get rid of the TV set, by the way. But for a while there, it was sort of good motivation to, they could work on the scene at the same time. So they had an activity room for that. The girls had, they had a dining room area. We turned it into a homeschool area. So they had a big table and all their stuff was there. So they actually really liked it because it was their area.
Right.
We had fun with that. My son just preferred to be in his room. You know, that's where he was. So I tried to move him someplace else. I just had to go with what he did. So I always had a lot of just resources around all the time. So just, they always just pick up different books, you know, that they might want to read. A lot of educational, we try not to watch TV per se very much, but we did have like some videos that, you know, a lot of the girls' history especially was done with historical fiction or historical type movies. So we would have those, and they would, you know, it was like their way to sort of have downtime, but then I got to throw some education there as well. Since the RV and the place set out in the yard. So we tried to like just have different things where they could naturally gravitate to and just stay there. Because they had their room set up to however they wanted as well, just because it's their own personal expression. My daughter, the one who loved, that was a writer. I mean, she was always going through journal books. So we always made sure that was available for her.
Yeah.
And then, of course, because I'm in, do herbalism and naturopathy too, a lot of that became part of their, their curriculum as well. Mm. So they had to understand their supplements. Yes. Actually, we had a course called Natural Health and First Aid. It was a class that all of them took. Oh, so they had to understand their treatment. Mm-hmm. And to know, whether it was medicine or herbs or supplements, whatever, they needed to understand what mm-hmm. it was. They knew why they were taking it.
Yeah. So that's so important.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And to treat with the treatment, and of course everything was allergy ready for them, and just because mm-hmm. it was her life. But I also did a lot of things with, diet as well. So, gluten-free diet. We all were on that. And just trying to have as many fruits and vegetables and real mm-hmm. food. We talked about the differences between what is food. Food is something that actually nourishes your body. Just because you eat it and you don't die, that does not mean it's a food.
I might use that.
No, it's just no point. And I tell my patients now, too, you're either feeding health or you're feeding disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes fits in one of the other categories. So if you're going to eat a bunch of junk food, you just fed disease and you just make the health condition worse. Mm-hmm. That said, we all sometimes can't eat perfectly. So if you do need a treat, you just enjoy that, just for a little bit and then move on from there. So we don't want to put guilt on that necessarily, but we have to realize that, food does feed one or the other.
Right. Yeah, I think my natural practitioner says 70%. If you're doing 70%, it's better than nothing. You're over the edge of, 50-50.
I call my business the healthy path because it's a path. We're all on a journey. Life is a journey. And hopefully we're always trying to make things better and better as we go on. Sometimes we do little detours. We have to go back and repeat part of the path and walk on a tangent. No, that was the wrong way. I got to come back. So it is a journey. Mm-hmm. And I think not to be really hard on yourself if you can't, do it perfectly. Because most of us don't jump to the finish line.
Yeah.
Even myself. But each year, I'm just making better and better choices.
It's all about the choices. Yeah.
So my kids got taught all of that.
That's awesome.
Points about, water and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And that too. So that's what we try to do. To work.
Well, I mean, you're developing a culture within your home and values as you do things. It's like we travel with our Berkey, and people are like, what is that? And we just filter our water, and so we just bring it on trips with us. But and our kids don't eat, they don't think that's strange because that's what we do. And so whatever you do on a regular basis becomes just this natural way of a lifestyle and living, and it creates a norm for you. And the more you can do that's healing, and to equip your kids for when they make those own choices themselves.
That's a lot of it right there. And looking back, I guess I maybe instinctively did a lot of that, but I think it was so important because especially when they go off to college, actually my son, I was trying to tell his dad, I think he needed to wait a year. And both he and my son and my husband just wanted him to, go off to OSU college. And he got into the engineering school and he did awesome. But I'm like, oh, he's not ready. I just know he's not ready. But he went and turned out he came back about mid-year because he wasn't ready. It was really hard on my son that he was, because basically there's a lot of shame with that. He had to come back, he dropped, his grade point average was still good, but he dropped classes before it turned into something bad.
Uh-huh.
And he had to come back home. But it was like, no, okay, that's okay. You learned some things here. So now we're going to go to the local college and you're going, you just go learn some more things and how to do college. And he did, and he was very successful. So there's always one, he's the one that again learns by experience. But I think it's trying to make it so that you're not, you try to make things so they can learn to cope, when they're in college or work or whatever. Doing down the road. I think that's a real important goal.
Yeah. I know you wanted to touch on a little bit home college for teens and adults. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Hey, is that something you guys have talked about at all?
We haven't really, no. Mm-mm.
This is something, you can take this concept sort of far or you can, basically there's a whole concept behind it. So a lot of times people know about, you can do college online. Okay, so that's still where you're you know, you're part of that school, you're just taking online classes, you just do it at home instead of going to school. So that's not necessarily what I'm talking about. So home college is sort of a continuation of homeschooling. So homeschooling is 12th grade and under, home college would be advanced beyond that. So this is ways where you sort of can design your own college program. Now, you can either go the accredited route, which will get an accredited degree, or you can go a non-accredited route, where you're doing things just for your own person. So I see, who should I use for an example? I just use my middle daughter. So she, this is too extreme to this. So basically she was one who got really bored in homeschooling. She got to the point where she wouldn't do hardly anything. And I'm like, what is wrong? I couldn't figure out what was wrong. And what turned out to be is that
she's my middle child. It must be a middle child thing.
I tried to punish her. Well, that didn't work. She just didn't care. So yeah. She didn't do anything. You know, she just, I was like, what do I do? It turned out she was bored. Okay. So even though I was trying to give her challenging things in high homeschooling, it wasn't enough. So, I mean, we just put her into college classes. So what we would do is, so what I mean by that is there's different ways of getting college credit. Okay, so let's just talk about doing it the accredited route first. Okay, so this is when we don't sign up to go to a specific college at on the onset. So you might do things like CLEP tests. Are you guys familiar with that?
Yeah.
CLEP tests is basically where you study a subject and you're just going to take a test and you get into
and then you get
credits.
Right.
Usually college, when my kids were doing it, was about $100.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 or 6 credits. I mean, that is like really phenomenal.
Yeah, there's whole organizations in the homeschooling realm that do those. So you don't have to look very far.
So she and my son were both really good test takers. So they did a lot of credits that way.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, we had her take German at the local community college for her first year. And then the second year, she actually did in Germany as a 16-year-old. For the summer. So she went and did that. So that was with another school. So basically she did different learning experiences. So some things she took at a college, some things were online. She did a lot of things through Liberty University, which Liberty University is a Christian school, but you don't have to be a Christian to go there. And they have a very lenient transfer policy. So you can three quarters of your credits can be from somewhere else.
Wow.
And only a quarter has to be taken from them. So it's really awesome. So this is a very liberal, accepting CLAPs, accepting things from all different places.
Yep.
My third daughter, she didn't want to take the typical histories. So she did like archaeology, and I forgot what the other one was. But those counted and transferred in as a history. So you can take the more classes you want from anywhere, really in the world.
Mm.
So the world is open to you to take these classes anywhere, but you need to make sure they transfer someplace. Your endpoint college will accept them. So Liberty is a big one for that. And there's also another school called Thomas Edison. It used to be State College. I think it's now called State University. Thomas Edison's another one that accepts a lot of credits, diverse credits, different places, and you just take a small amount there. So basically that's what they both did. Both my girls did that. I'm trying to explain this, but things got transferred in just very well with them. And they ended up getting an accredited degree. So, So that's what we're, but basically, so a lot of things you're sort of planning on your own. I'm acting as their guidance counselor and help them with credits. So, I have a page on my website called Home College. We'll talk about the website at the end, but it sort of goes through this procedure a little bit more. But the idea is that you're sort of continuing the idea of like high school, but you're continuing to manage it for the kids. And it's like, okay, now you need to work on, you have a choice between this course, that course, which one do you want,
And
you can take it anywhere, and it just opened up so many possibilities. Now the other way, if you want to take that to a more of an extreme. So like, my kids, they all wanted to get the accredited degree. They didn't want to say, mom said that, I got a degree. But another way to do this, which a lot of people I've seen this concept around, is where you just throw out the whole accreditation altogether because most of the credit isn't worth anything anyway.
Right.
A lot of times they take things you're not interested in, how good is the education anyway. Mm-hmm. So the idea is you can actually design your own program, a course of education, to for whatever that the student wants to do. So my one daughter took a year to, we call it the gap year at the time, but it could have easily been more like a home college idea where she did a lot of personal development, just philosophy, just psychology, and just a lot of things she did on her own. And she learned it better than she would have taken a class in it.
Right.
And the thing is, all of that information is what she's now using to do her her coaching career. So it's turning in, but that's more valuable than the courses that she ended up taking, you know, to get her accredited degree. Right. So I think if you, depending on where your kiddo is and what their goals are, you know, you don't have to go to college. You can either plan a gap year type of thing, which that's educational. You can travel. You can then you can still design your own credits for it, just like you would a high school credit. It's not accredited. Okay, so, so you can't say I've got a college degree, but you can say I have a college equivalency, which may work in some careers.
I never even thought about calling it that.
It's a real different concept on it. And I think it's, because if I just think back to the things that I've learned, I have learned so much more on my own outside of the college system. So this is, I think this is the way like a lot of the founding fathers did things, where they learned things on their own. They read books, they did law, they just read law books. So it's trying to bring that idea back again. So again, it's not for everybody, but it's, but I think the accredited program where you can actually, what I find with my college patients is that they cannot do a full load and have Lyme disease. It's just that they're struggling big time. College is like the number of credits you have to do, you know, to be full time, which you have to basically sort of have to do to make it worthwhile to be on campus. You know, it's just so taxing on the brain. It takes so much energy that most of the patients just can't do it. So so this is where the idea of taking the CLABS, you know, there's other ways of getting earning credits. On your own, you know, anyway, you know, you can do it. You can do it part time in those cases, so you can still have your disability, have your medical problem, whatever it is. Work around that and do what you can. Right. Working towards that goal and transfer it to someplace that can accept it. And it's been very, very helpful to the students that will do that. The ones that, and sometimes the parents and the kids just say, "No, my kid's got to get through school. They got to do it in 4 years." And but then we need you to make them perfect. And it's like. It's a realistic expectation. So, so trying to figure out a way to still, you can still go to college or, you know, but doing it in a way that they can do it.
Right. Yeah.
Too, so if you have some that are going off to college, there's some colleges that are so much better at handling disabilities than others.
Yes, exactly.
Some of them, they meet the letter of the law, but they don't, they're not helping. And others actually go way above and beyond.
They do.
So really looking into that as well, if that's a career path. My third daughter, she ended up just getting an associate degree because she didn't need to go anymore. She's not a school type person. So she's learned a lot on her own. She's done a lot of theater. She's now in circus school. She's doing a lot of these fun things. Just those on her own, which means more to her than some of the college degrees. So
And a lot of those courses that aren't accredited, sometimes they give you certifications too.
Yes.
And so they do count for a lot.
That's another excellent way of going. So you can take a small amount of courses or maybe just one course, you know, and you can still, right now she's doing getting her coaching certificate by taking a program, I guess.
Right.
And that's more what she's wanting to do. And and then also like the one who wants to be a writer, and she's writing. She's doing the writing.
You just do it. Right. Exactly.
It's not always like you have to follow this career path. There's other ways of working with your disability, you know, working with your medical condition to try to meet the goals in a different way.
Yeah. And we found too, you know, asking people within the industry, does it even make sense to do school? Because my daughter's talking about going into tattooing, and we looked at a couple tattooing schools, and we talked to a tattoo artist, and she goes, everybody would laugh at you if you went to tattoo school. You got to apprentice. And so we're like, good, don't waste the money. But, you know, it's good to ask around, you know, what would you accept for going into this career?
Right, that's a good point.
But yeah, again, it's what whatever they need to learn. And some are more self-directed and they aren't going to learn the best, like you were talking about, within that student teacher environment. They're the more they play around with it, actually, the more they're going to learn. Uh-huh. And so our kids, you know, if we've homeschooled them long enough, like you have with yours, they should know that by the time they get that age as to how best they learn. And manage their ups and down days if they have a chronic illness too.
Exactly. I think it's much more so than they would if they were in public school. Mm-hmm. I think to meet those goals much better.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for expanding on that. We have not really touched on that very much. And it's good for parents to know that there are other options out there, because we always feel like, well, it's either, you know, trade school or they're doing life skills or, you know, they're, and we've talked a little bit about gap years, but yeah, there's so many options.
I think if you choose a gap year too, is what I've told people before, and like the little said, they have to take off a year because of their illness or, you know, their disability. Mm-hmm. I usually tell them, okay, you need to do something with your time off. Okay, so yes. You want to tell people, like, you don't want to say, well, I sat at home because I had a disability. You know, like, what did you do at that time? Maybe you read, mm-hmm. you're an expert at World War II. You read all these books.
Right.
You know, maybe you did take a trip, you know, someplace. Mm-hmm. And what did you learn from that? Or maybe you volunteer someplace. So trying to do something with that time. And that's still sort mm-hmm. of like a, what I call the home college or un-college type of because you're still learning. So as long as you're mm-hmm. learning and improving, you know, then, you know, you're meeting your goals.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how my middle one got two gap years, but it worked out that way. He got one right after high school. And then he had a major physical disability issue that ended up him back at square one this last year. And so he got another gap year. He's been trying to heal.
Because he's probably learning more in that mm-hmm. time than I would if he was just taking the typical.
Yes, because otherwise he'd be just working a 9-to-5 job and, you know, and just doing. And he's, you know, you create that lifestyle of learning within your children. And it's something, you know, we've bred in them because they just want to learn. They'll be picking up books and, you know, he's always telling us new historical facts about something. And so,
that's
yeah.
Great. Yeah, that and critical thinking, I think, are the two.
Yes.
You know how to teach yourself and critical think. Those mm-hmm. are very cool.
We've got just a couple minutes left, Valerie, and I would love for you to share about your website and the resources that you have on there for families. I'm going to bring up the website here, so if you're listening on the podcast, it's the and then a dash healthy-path.org.
You'll also get there, even if you left the dashes out, and just thehealthypath.org, it'll take you there as
it'll
well.
It'll take you there too? Okay, that's good
This
to know.
This is the official one. The other one okay. is sort of a backdoor. So yeah, the website's mostly about Lyme disease and, you know, problems associated with Lyme disease, other co-conditions that go along with Lyme disease. But the readers that are audience would be interested in I call it the healthy section. So it's a healthy diet, healthy exercise, healthy sleep, healthy stress management. There's a whole section there on just how to be healthy. That's good for anybody. So I think that'd be an interesting section. Mm-hmm. And then there's one tab on homeschooling and another one for home college. So there's a lot of links there and how to get started as well. So hopefully that. I think I got some favorite books. There's miscellaneous topics on there that may be interesting as well.
Cool.
But this is really the Lyme. But I think. And you know, those other sections would be helpful too.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And yeah, there's just, you know, chronic illnesses, but it's surprising how many people I have that I've run into that have been talking about having Lyme disease. And, you know, we've got a couple of minutes left. Is it just that we haven't been diagnosing it, or is it becoming more prevalent of an issue?
A little bit of both, but mostly that this has not been diagnosed. Everybody that I have seen with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome and autoimmune diseases of any sort all have Lyme disease as the root cause.
Really?
So we are missing it. It is epidemic and it's being missed everywhere. So Lyme disease, it is the acute form. You know, you get a rash, you feel sick for, you know, like flu-like symptoms. acute form, but there's also a chronic form that you're just tired, you're just aches and pains, maybe mm-hmm. you've got some stuff, some anxiety, depression might be thrown into there, mm-hmm. just different symptoms in various organ parts, and you're thinking, like, is my child a hypochondriac? Well, they may have Lyme disease.
Wow, that's really good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of course, the whole pans and pandas.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's mostly dealing around strep, and strep is a chronic infection, can cause mm-hmm. those illnesses. So what happens is that most of the people with pans and pandas actually have Lyme and a lot of other infections too. So you have
really?
To, the way to work on fixing that, of course, is to get the balance back, because our immune system, if it's strong, should handle it. But mm-hmm. it's also changing our terrain to make our terrain healthy so that it can then not really grow organisms that shouldn't be there.
Wow. So it's a long term, like you were saying, talking about the die off and just mm-hmm. getting reset.
Yes. Wow. So it's just a huge problem area. And it can also cause Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, a lot of the dementias out there. Infections along with toxins.
Right. I have heard those are related to inflammation, so I guess that would make sense.
And I've asked, then where's the inflammation come from? Okay, either toxins or infections, and a lot of times both. So,
right.
So Lyme disease is an area where they politically do not want to have much of that, so they made the testing so that it looks like it's, the person doesn't have it. We'll get a little political, but like COVID testing, they do just the opposite. They want to make sure, make it sound like everybody has it. So they're both two diseases with a lot of the politics with them.
Huh. Wow. I'm sure we could have a whole hour discussion on that. But thank you so much, Valerie. This has been so helpful. And I know that it was a blessing to me just to hear what you had to say. And I know it's just going to be a blessing to our community, those who joined us, as well as those who are going to listen on the interview. So thank you just for taking time out to share with us, sharing about your experiences and just the knowledge and wisdom that you have.
Yeah, just as I want to encourage, the parents out there that, homeschooling can be tough and some days you wonder, but it's so worth it. It's just so, to see what how the kids develop and grow and the time you spend with family and the bonds, those are things you just don't get back, so I think
exactly.
Congratulate all the parents out there for taking this journey. That's awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Even if you're just one toe in. That's awesome. Yes. And we do want to thank our audience for joining us on this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. This broadcast is sponsored by viewers like you. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to SPED Homeschool, you can visit our website at spedhomeschool.com and click donate. And we'd appreciate that to just keep our resources coming and broadcasts like this. This is the end of this month of focusing on medical issues and homeschooling. Next month, we're going to be talking about freebies and just some free ways that you can supplement or even homeschool without any costs, or maybe get to the root of some things that would save you a lot of money in the long run, which is what we're going to talk about next week. We're going to talk with Dr. Jan Bedell again. She'll be back on the show, and she's going to talk about neurodevelopmental strategies that improve student success. And so they're just different strategies you can use within your homeschooling, using really anything, but they neurodevelopmentally help your child to make those connections in their brain, which of course make learning easier. And so you'll want to join us for that broadcast next week. We'll be right here again on Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 Central Time. So you don't want to miss that. And then check out our website at spedhomeschool.com and see all the other resources that we have there. We have quite a few different things to help you get started, keep going, be encouraged, and connect with us and with others. So definitely check that out as well. So thank you again, Valerie. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm so excited I found you, because I did an internet search and I'm like, who could I have on the show to talk about this? And Valerie just came up and it was such a godsend. So I greatly appreciate all that you shared with us. And I know it'll be a blessing for many, many years while we have this out there as a resource for parents. So, and definitely check out Valerie's website at thehealthypath.org. And then I'll see you all next time. Have a great week, everybody. And we'll see you next Tuesday.